Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast, which is part of Fantasy Basketball International. This is episode 55, and for today, Adam King is going to join me to talk about the Kings, the Warriors, and the Heat. So let's go ahead and get into it. And before we get to talking about some of these NBA teams, we are going to tell you and remind you that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore, thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe, so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. Kingy, we've been using the products a month and a half now-ish, roughly. Yeah. What's been your experience using Manscaped?
Look, it's been good. I mean, I alluded to this on my shows. It's not something that I have sort of used frequently before or anything like that. I have had a couple of goes at it. It works well. I have been using the, I have to remember the name. I think it's the Weed Whacker. So okay, that's the nose ear one. So yeah, I have been using that one pretty regularly actually. And it does a good job. As you get older, you get hair in weird places and it's hard to trim and that sort of thing. So it's been really good. And then I've used the lawnmower, the 5.0, a couple of times. Yeah. My wife has helped me a little bit with that too. So not, we don't need to go into details, but yes, she has. And so no, it's been yeah, good. Glad they came on board and sent us some of their products. Although coming into winter here, more hair can be better because we're starting to get pretty cold here already.
Well, you can use it to just keep it groomed. You don't have to worry about shaving everything off. You can just, you know, kind of be an artist with it a little bit and just trim it the way you want it. You know, one of the things that they say is that it's waterproof. You can use it in the shower, the bath, or in the ocean. I went to the beach last week and I brought it with me. I didn't give it a go in the ocean, but it was something that crossed my mind because it is a waterproof product. Just as a reminder, you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove, Kingy. Now we're going to talk about some fantasy basketball here. We've got three teams that we're going to be breaking down. As I've been kind of going through this series a little bit, it's been a lot of the tanking teams or teams that missed the playoffs. The last episode that I recorded was fun. We got to talk about the Hawks and the Rockets, who both moved up in the lottery. So that was a fun thing to talk about. But now we're kind of getting to the middle of the pack. So the Kings, Warriors, and Heat. The Kings and Warriors lost in the play-in tournament, and the Heat lost in five games to the Celtics in the first round. I'm going to go ahead and bring up a slideshow here just to have a little bit of information for anybody watching. As we start with the Kings, who went 46-36, they beat the Warriors in their first play-in game, lost in the second play-in game. They'll head into the draft with picks 13 and 45, trying to make it one number. And for each of these teams throughout the series, I've been doing like an overall team direction, just kind of saying, where is this team at? For the Kings, I put in limbo with stars. Like, they're kind of in the middle of the pack, or at least they were this year. Obviously last year they had a magnificent season where they finished as the 3 seed. And then this past season back in the play-in tournament, which, you know, 46-36 isn't a play-in tournament team in the East, but it is in the West because of how competitive it is. So it's not a knock on their team. That's just, and they're in the West, so that's just the way it is. But they do have stars. Like, De'Aaron Fox is one of the best point guards in the league. Sabonis is obviously one of the best bigs in the league. where do they kind of go from here? Like, how, what is your overall feeling about this Kings team, where they are and what they can do moving forward?
Yeah, they're an interesting one. I think, as you said there, they were the third seed last season, but I don't know. I don't think we really took them seriously as the third seed. Like, they, I think, were they eliminated in the first round from memory?
Yeah, lost in seven to the Warriors.
So, yes, they were a third round in terms of standings, but they're really, as you said, they're just sort of, they're in limbo. They're stuck sort of probably in this range they finished this year, I think, sort of from the sixth seed through to the 10th, somewhere in there. Their squad is good, but I'm not sure. The team they've got is not good enough to take them to that next level. Like, they need to change something. I don't know what that is. Sabonis, obviously very good player, but has his shortcomings on the defensive end, and we see that in the playoffs, and teams will attack him. And so, yeah, I don't know. They're a tough one. Like, it's been good to see them competing and up there in the playoffs again after such a long drought. But Keegan Murray is an interesting sort of piece for them. I think he took some steps forward this year, which was good. But the fact that they're still rolling Harrison Barnes out there as a key piece, to me, is not a good sign, because he's not a good player anymore. Keon Ellis was intriguing at the back end of the season. He was sort of thrown into a bigger role because of injuries to Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk. And look, I mean, he does bring a defensive element to their team, which is what they need, I think. So I don't know. It's a weird one. It's hard to know until we see what they do in the draft, and then whether they decide to just run it back, or are they going to actually realize that, hey, like, there's no way they're not beating Denver. They're not beating Minnesota. They're not beating Memphis, I don't think, when Memphis are healthy. Oklahoma, Dallas, Clippers. Like, there's a number of teams I'd have ahead of the Kings here. So it's a bit of a wait and see for me. And like I said, I do think they need to make a move to strengthen the team somehow. I'm just not sure which direction they go in.
Yeah, and there's been, like, they were involved in trade rumors. I remember specifically for Siakam, but I know that wasn't the only star player they were trying to get in on to be able to bring in, help their team, because they are a good team. But in the West, like, you can't just be a good team. Like, you can't even really just be a great team. You have to be one of, if not the best in the league, to really be able to have a chance of coming out of such a tough conference. Because if you're not, like, you have a team with, obviously the Lakers are not, and LeBron and AD aren't what they were in their prime, but a team with LeBron and AD playing at a high level that is losing five games in the first round, like, it's just that stacked of a conference. So yeah, the Kings do have to make moves. What those moves are, it's kind of hard to see at this point. You mentioned Harrison Barnes is an interesting guy. I think he fits great as a potential trade guy, a contract filler. The interesting part of, you know, where that is what picks do they move? Because they have 13 this year in a quote-unquote weaker class. Their first is going to go to Atlanta. It's top 12 protected next year. I don't imagine the Kings take a step back next year. So unless that happens and they get their first again, they can trade that potentially. But it's kind of a, like, in limbo is just kind of where they are. They have to make moves, but it doesn't feel like they have a ton of assets to make moves. We'll see what they're able to do.
As you said, like, I don't think they take a step back next year, but I could see other teams taking a step forward where they just sort of stick with who they are and what they are. And if that's the case, I've just sort of pulled up the standings here. They were the ninth seed this year, so they were ahead of the Warriors, the Rockets, the Jazz, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, the Blazers. I mean, who knows, but I could certainly see the Warriors, the Grizzlies jumping ahead of them. The Rockets, potentially. I mean, the Rockets took some big steps this season. And who knows what the Spurs are going to do? Like, they've got Wemby and players are going to want to play with Wemby. So their rebuild could be fast-tracked if they can land like a Trae Young or DeJounte Murray, or if they can get a good point guard in there and then get some veteran pieces, they could jump ahead of the Kings. So theoretically, I mean, the Kings could fall to the 12th or 13th seed without having made any changes if other teams improve. So it's a weird situation. And that might not be necessarily be a bad thing because, I mean, you're the draft rookie person. Next year's draft is looking stronger from what I understand.
Yeah, it's already projected to be a better class, but I think that also is a fact that are factoring in how quote unquote weak this class is. But a class headlined by Cooper Flagg is going to be stronger than this year. Plus a number of other guys. I haven't done much research into the class, but from what I've read and heard and seen, it's a better class than what this year is. But we'll talk about some of these guys from a fantasy perspective now. De'Aaron Fox, who was better than I think I really even realized. It felt like he had sort of taken a step back in certain categories, but he took another step forward in others. So points went up 25 to 26.6. Assists dropped half an assist. But really the major leaps that he made were steals went from 1.1 to, I believe, 2.0 per game. I think Basketball Monsters including some playoff stats here, so I think it's 2.0. The threes jumped up, almost doubled. The field goal percentage dropped, which makes sense when he's shooting more threes. And then the free throw percentage is still just so frustrating for a guy that is, you know, the point guard, but also a guy that was making almost three threes per game. For him to shoot 73% from the free throw line, it was rather infuriating. But I don't know. How do you kind of feel about De'Aaron Fox, who is 26 at this point? Like, how do we view him moving forward? Do we think, hey, he's taken leaps the last 2 years? Oh, he's just going to keep producing at this level. Like, he's done taking steps forward. Or do we say, hey, like, maybe he can do what he did again, but the free throw percentage goes from 73 back up to 78, and he's even better in nine categories? Or is he a guy that you could see taking a step back?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. He was a lot better than I thought he'd be. I have him in a dynasty league, so I was very happy about that, although I'm not competing. But I thought he took some really good steps forward this year, as you said, especially on the defensive end, basically doubling his steal numbers. I think he led the league in steals, or at least was right up in the top three in the league. So that was something we probably didn't see coming. And the threes, something I think we've probably talked about for a couple of years, adding that element to his game. But the free throws were obviously not ideal. I'm just throwing in did not refresh. In terms of what he does next year, can he get better? Will he get worse? 26, I mean, he's theoretically entering his prime. So the next few years are when you want to be on him in fantasy. And I think if you fact at this point, given this has been a trend, if you are willing to punt free throws, which I just did in the rankings, he's the 10th ranked player. So that, I mean, that shows you how much of a negative his free throws were. He was at almost six attempts per game, shooting 73%. So if he can simply bump that back up like closer to 80, then he goes to being easily a top 20 player. I think this is probably who he is now. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of room for growth on the defensive end. I don't think he can go to above two steals a game. And probably, I don't know, expecting two steals a game again next year might be a little bit wishful thinking. So maybe you sort of, I don't know, split the difference, and maybe he's at 1.6 next year, which is still really good, 1.6, 1.7. But if he ups his free throw percentage to 77, 78, his scoring probably goes from 26.6 to 28, maybe, 27.5. So, no, I really like him for next season. I think, obviously, we've talked about the fact that they need to make some changes, so let's just keep an eye on who comes in, but they're not bringing in a point guard to replace him or anything like that. So, I think Fox is probably locked in as a second rounder next season. And if you can get him towards the back end based on what he did this season, I think there's a little bit of scope for him to move up. And yeah, I don't know. I was just looking at numbers and this is a bit off topic. De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Maxey next year? Who would you rather? And maybe throw Jalen Brunson into that discussion. I don't know. They're sort of two players that have been talked about the last few weeks because of their playoff performances. But I don't know. Would you have a preference there?
I think with that specific question, it's just going to come down to ADPs for me because and like what kind of team I'm trying to build, like dependent how important are free throws to me. If I'm literally punting them, then Fox. If I'm not, then like maybe Maxey. They're also close. I was pulling up the mock that we did before the season even ended, and you went Jalen Brunson, pick 26. Maxey went 28. Raf got him. And then I went Fox at 32 in a build with Luka and Şengün and then Zion and Gobert. So I fully embraced the free throw punt. And I feel like that's a great fit for Fox. And it's going to make him even more effective. But I think if you can't deal with the free throws, then you probably have to go with one of the other two. I almost want to say Maxey just because I feel like Jalen Brunson has really turned it on for the playoffs and like was obviously still playing incredibly well down the stretch. But I think in people's minds, they're going to remember this Jalen Brunson that was one of the best players in the playoffs. And he may not be quite as good in the regular season, especially, you know, October, November, December. So I think I would probably go Maxey in that case.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up the draft we're doing right now. Fox went at it's a 14 team, so 15. Fox went at 18, which I think is probably about as high as you want to go for him. I don't think I'd want to go much higher than that. And Maxey went three picks later, and then Brunson went at the end of the second round, so 28. Yeah. Yeah, so that's I don't know, that's interesting to see Fox going quite a bit earlier there in that one, but I think both Maxey and Fox are going to be second rounders next year.
I agree. This has also just been a very strange, unorthodox draft. So I was talking, who was I? I think I was talking to Dan Titus about this yesterday, and I was saying I'm pretty sure like some people just like because some of the guys that I've gotten in the later rounds, I'm like, they would have gone if people saw them. I just don't think people scrolled down far enough to be able to see like getting Cason Wallace in the 12th round of a 14 team league or like Tari Eason the round before that with some of the other guys that have gone. I just think that maybe people just didn't scroll down to see them.
Yeah.
Because I mean, with the way things are looking with Josh Giddey, like there's a chance that Cason Wallace is a starter in OKC next year.
I think he's almost certainly a starter. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I'll take him in the 12th round. Like, sure, but I think it really was people saw their notification, hey, I'm on the clock. I'm just going to take whoever's up top here. It's a mock in May. It's okay if I do this. It is. And
I'm actually going to let this league
too serious.
I'm going to let this league play out. Like, we're not going to make moves or anything like that, but I'm just going to let it play out because I actually love my team in this league.
it's better if we're putting $100 buy-in real quick if you guys don't mind.
It's, now that we King actually loves drafted, his team. We actually drafted side by side in this draft.
Yeah.
So probably sniped each other a couple of times. But, my team is very high risk, high reward. But if Anthony Davis, LaMelo Ball, Zion Williamson, Mark Williams, Robert Williams, if they can stay healthy, then I love my team. If they get injured, then I'm going to finish last. So.
That's the way it happens. Everybody's team. If you get injured, then you finish last. That's just what happens. But we'll get somewhat back on track and talk about Sabonis. Sorry. Well, actually, real quick note, that's what we do here. This podcast, we get off track and have fun. That's what we do. just wanted to add in, we did a, I don't remember if you were in that. It was a dynasty mock that we did, dynasty slow draft, just like a month or so ago. De'Aaron Fox went 29th in that. Domantas Sabonis went 27th. And as I'm just quickly pulling it up, because I have it open, Sabonis went, am I totally missing where Sabonis went in this draft, the redraft one that we're doing right now? Did he go 14, 15? Okay. So a little bit earlier than Fox, a few picks before him in that. Coming off a really good season, had the massive double-double streak that was, I mean, historical. I don't remember exactly how long it went. I think it was like 61 games, but I don't remember exactly where that is in like the all-time double-double streak leaderboard, but it was pretty high up there. Fantastic season for him. Career highs in rebounds and assists. His free throw percentage dropped a little bit as well. He wasn't a good free throw shooter, but he joined De'Aaron Fox in being even worse at the free throw line, which when your two best players are taking steps back from the free throw line, they're already not good from there. It doesn't help your team very much, but still a really good nine cap player. Same thing with Fox. I mean, Sabonis is a little bit older, but how do we kind of view him and this team? Like, are you just expecting the same thing again next year?
Yeah, I think so. I think of the two of them, if we were talking about which one has a little bit of upside to improve, for me, it would be Fox. I think Sabonis is who Sabonis is at this point. He's not someone that I typically draft. He just goes a little bit higher than I prefer. That's not to say he's a good player, because he is a really good player. But just the high turnovers from a center, poor free throw percentage. He's not a high volume scorer. He's close to 19, 20 points a game. But in those early rounds, unless you're punting points, if you're punting points, he's worth going there. But in those early rounds, you really try to reach and, well, not reach if possible, but you need to try and get your points category filled quite early, and taking him as sort of a early second round player, only scoring 19 points a game. Unless you're punting points, I think that just hurts you. So, I like him, but I mean, as we've sort of alluded to, defensively, he's not great. Although he did get a defensive player of the year.
I was just about to mention that. You're talking about a guy that was voted as a what did he get, like a third place vote?
A third place, I think. Place? I don't know.
Third he best must defender have a vote. In the league. Third best defender in the league.
He must be, for some reason, Sabonis has a vote in that category, because I don't know who would vote for him.
It's, I mean, you would think that, I have no idea who did it, but I would say, okay, maybe it was like a Kings beat reporter, but you would think that, hey, like they're watching Sabonis 82 games, like maybe they realize, hey, there's three other better defenders in the league that I can vote for, but maybe it's somebody that's saying, hey, the rebounding was so impressive and rebounding ends possessions on defense, he deserves a third place vote for that. That's the only way I can justify it in my mind, that he would be even remotely close to getting a defensive player of the year vote, considering the elite defenders that are in this league. So
yeah,
that one was kind of funny to see. Did he also get, was it an MVP vote as well? I think
He might have. I don't know.
There's something else kind of crazy that he got. But yeah, still going to be a really good player, especially in fantasy. If you're looking for specific categories, hoping that the free throw percentages can go up a few points, but not high expectations there. I guess the interesting part to me is, because he's not a great defender, do they have to make a change where he's moving to power forward like he was with the Pacers? And he's still, that's probably not going to affect his rebounding much. I mean, he's still an elite rebounder with the Pacers with Miles Turner down there, because Miles Turner isn't a great rebounding center. But some sort of situation where they have another like center that is starting with Sabonis at power forward. I don't know exactly how that looks. And that probably doesn't maximize Sabonis on the offensive end. But I think that the defense has been like, not his defense specifically, but like the team's defense just hasn't been good enough to really like compete for a championship. So is that something that they do, and how does that impact Sabonis? I think that's something that we'll kind of find out over the next few months. Maybe see what they do with the 13th pick. Moving on to Keegan Murray, who went 78th in that dynasty mock. He made a leap in year two, and he was, you know, significantly better, sixth rounder in nine cat leagues. What do we expect from him in year three? Because he was, he kind of made a little bit of a leap, at least in, I think, every single category got better. I think a slight drop in threes per game, but he was a top 60 guy without dominating any individual category. Like, I feel like there's still room for him to improve. Like, he was an older rookie. He's almost 24, heading into his third year, but 15.4 or 15 points per game. Like, that's something that he can improve on. Like, he could get that to 18, you know, a slight improvement in field goal percentage, like minuscule things that he could do and be a better nine cat value. Like, is that kind of what you're expecting from him in year three?
Yeah, I think so. He was, I didn't have him anywhere last season, but he sort of quietly just plugged away and as you said, put up top 60 value without really doing anything noteworthy. He had a couple of breakout games where his shot was just dropping and he went for 40. I don't think he had a 50-point game, but I think he had a couple of 40-point games. Maybe he had a 50. I don't know. If you look at value, so looking at his value here on Basketball Monster, his best category was turnovers. So, I mean, that itself, it's not a red flag, but it's something you just need to consider when you look at overall value for a player, is if it's turnovers that is buoying his overall value, you need to then look at his other categories and go, oh, okay, he didn't actually do a lot outside of that. But yeah, I think there's certainly room for him to grow. And if they do trade away Harrison Barnes, or at least, I guess, put more of a spotlight on Keegan Murray and play him as that second offensive option consistently behind De'Aaron Fox, then... And part of that could be looking at moving Sabonis to the four. I mean, there's been no word of that, but someone like a Brook Lopez, he's not coming to Sacramento, but a floor spacing center who can block shots and doesn't demand the ball would probably be the best fit in terms of not impacting Sabonis, because Lopez is happy to grab three rebounds a game. We know that. So Sabonis could still get his rebounds. You need floor spacing because he's not a three-point shooter. So someone like a Lopez would be a good fit. It won't be Lopez, but maybe there's
maybe,
someone
maybe like
there.
A Miles Turner. Do you think anybody would try that? Like, that could work.
It's not going to
grab rebounds, space the floor, protect the rim. Like, that sounds like it could work. I don't know why nobody's tried that yet.
No, I didn't want to say it, but yes, he also is a really good example of the kind of player that they could look at. So I think Keegan Murray, looking at nine cat next season, yeah, you probably want to draft him. He went in the fourth pick of the sixth round, I think. Fourth pick of the sixth round in a 14 team league. So I don't know what number that is, but he's probably one of those players that you can get at a little bit of a value. So maybe around 75, 70, and then he could be a top 50 player just because he doesn't turn the ball over. He hits threes. I think his free throws, he's 83% now. He could probably get that up to 85, 45 from the field. He had a steal a game. So this is probably his floor. I think this is a pretty solid fantasy guy for the foreseeable future. But I'm not sure he has the capacity or the ability to break out and be a top 20, 30 player yet. Mm-hmm. But who knows? He's still only very young. I mean, it was only his second season, so.
Yeah, and I looked it up. He didn't have a 50-point game. He had the 47-point game where he hit 12 threes. But I think he had – I don't remember exactly what it was, but a bunch early, it kind of seemed like he was going to break the record. And then I think maybe he had 12 through three quarters. It was something like that, and then he didn't – he only got a few shots in the fourth, whatever, came close. But yeah, I mean, he still has plenty of room for improvement, and he is going into year three a little, like I said, he's going to be 24, but he's going into year three, like plenty of room and plenty of time to grow. And if they can ask him to do more, or they need to ask him to do more, then I think it can happen, and we'll see how good he can get. I think you're right. I'm not expecting him to ever be a top 20, top 25 kind of guy, but what he did this past year, but like just a little bit more, like he could approach top 40 to me. I don't think he's ever a guy that I would draft that early. And maybe I'm wrong. And maybe he totally surprises us and is just incredible. Is able to do that. But the last guy I want to talk about, the Kings, I've been trying to do just four players per team because we like to talk, we go in depth with everything. That's how it is with all these podcasts that, I think I was slightly off topic. I was talking to Dan Titus about it. I was like, I think I just need to start doing one team per episode as opposed to trying to fit three in one now that we're talking about everybody so much. But Keon Ellis went 153 in a dynasty mock. What does his long-term value kind of look like? Like, he in 21 starts, he averaged 8.8 points, 3.5 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.7 steals, 0.6 blocks, and 1.8 threes per game. I don't think he's ever going to be a high volume scorer. Like, I don't even know how, I mean, maybe 10 points per game is within his like realm of possibilities, but probably not much more than that. The value is going to be if he's playing close to 30 minutes per game, he can get an average two steals per game and get you a block or two. And he had a nice stretch of games where he was getting multiple blocks and multiple steals. And he showcased the ability to knock down threes as well late in the year. Is he the starting shooting guard of the future in Sacramento with, you know, Malik Monk still seeing plenty of minutes as the sixth man? Is the Kevin Herter / Chris Duarte era / experiment kind of out the window and they're like just rotation pieces off the bench and potentially not even a rotation piece when it comes to Duarte? And it's just Herter and Malik Monk off the bench because Keon Ellis still fits as a four spacer, but provides them with a like really good defensive player, which is something that they need more of.
Yeah, he's probably the big question mark on this roster because he was starting, but he was sort of forced into that role. It wasn't something that was planned, I'm sure, by the Kings. They didn't foresee him being a starter at the start of the year. So it's probably a question they're internally they're having at the moment is what does our starting unit look like? And he certainly has the most defensive upside. He's a bit Herb Jonesy for me. Like if I was just trying to think of a player comp, and Herb Jones is sort of a floor spacer who will get you 10 or 11 points a game, but can get you 1.5, 2 steals, 0.8 to one block. And he's a top 70 player because of that. So he was drafted in our draft, but way, way down. So like last 11th round, fourth pick of the 11th round. So in the 150 or something. So, yeah, I think he's – until we know what his role's going to be, if he's starting, I think you draft him because we saw that he can be a fantasy asset. If he's going to just shift back to the bench and they're going to play Kevin Herter, I don't know what Monk's contract is like, but he's – I mean, I think I've heard his name sort of thrown around in trade talks and – free agency and things like that as a player that a couple of teams might chase. So he won't even be there. Kevin Herter, I don't know. I think I'd rather have Keon Ellis. I think if the team is serious about trying to advance and progress, Keon Ellis gives them a better chance at that. So I'm really not sure at this point if they come out next year and we get wind that he's going to start. I think you draft him with one of your later picks. If he's going to come off the bench, maybe you take him in your last round and just it could be that Kevin Herter starts for a week and then they go, oh, that's right. that's why we should be starting Keon Ellis. Yeah, look, I think he's probably a draftable player, but we probably need to get a feel for what his role is going to be before making a final call.
Yeah, and with Malik Monk, he is a free agent. I'm just assuming that they're going to re-sign him because I just think that he wants to be there as well, but we'll see. Like, maybe things change. He ends up elsewhere, which just means more minutes for both Keon Ellis and Kevin Herter. And enough for both.
There's a ton of teams that could do with a Malik Monk. Orlando, sort of straight away, I think of Orlando.
Yeah, no, Orlando could use a lot of anybody that can shoot. Orlando can use. As far as, you know, what Sacramento could do with the 13th pick, originally on my list, I just had some of the wings that could potentially be available in that, you know, area. Ron Holland, Jacoby Walter, Cody Williams. I don't think Cody Williams and probably not Ron Holland will be there at 13. I think Jacoby Walter will. I also have Ryan Dunn out of Virginia, a really good defensive player. I've seen him mocked down into the second round. So maybe I think I'm just significantly higher on him than most other people, but a defensive wing could help. I also added, as we were talking, Kyle Filipowski out of Duke, just a stretch big. Like, that would be kind of what we were talking about, mm-hmm. that they could use. And he's not going to be what we were talking about, like a Miles Turner, Brooke Lopez type player necessarily, like out of the gate, but a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit, offer them another option. Just if they want to run Sabonis at the four or just have him be at the four as like a stretch option. But we will move on to Golden State, who also went 46-36, but they lost in their matchup with the Kings on the first play-in game. They only have the 52nd pick this year because of, I think it was a top four protected first, and obviously they didn't move up in the lottery. So that pick is going, if this will load, tell me exactly who has pick 14. The Portland Trailblazers, that's right. So they have an extra first. Golden State doesn't pick till 52, so probably not going to get any help in the draft, barring a trade. But my overall direction for this team is they're an aging team trying to contend. They do have some young guys on there, and those are the guys I actually want to talk about, because they obviously still have older guys that we're just not going to talk about, or not really break down because we just don't care as much. You know, Draymond, there's been rumors of him being traded. Klay Thompson's a free agent. There's a chance that he signs elsewhere. That's another example of a player that Orlando could use. How do you kind of feel about this Golden State team? I mean, if you wanted to devote 5 minutes to have your personal feelings about Draymond Green, like, feel free. But I also do want to know your overall feelings around this Golden State team and what they could look like.
No, that's 5 minutes of my life that I won't get back if I have to talk about Draymond Green. So talking about the team as a whole, yeah, look, they're another team that's in a bit of they're not stuck, but given the success they've had with the veteran players, I do get that it's hard to move on. I mean, Curry's not going anywhere. I think we can all agree that he'll end his career as a Warrior. So it's the other two that are the potential pieces that could be moved. They're sort of, I don't know, like they potentially view themselves as a contender with the team they've got. I'm not sure they are. So, yeah, I mean, if I was the Warriors, I would just go, look, thanks for your work here, Draymond and Clay, but you don't fit what we're trying to do. I know that's a hard call to make, as I said, given their success and the legacy and that sort of thing, but it is time, I think, for them to focus on Kuminga, Jackson Davis, Pajemski, the three names you've got here. I think Wiggins is someone that he's not on this list, but I'm not sure what his future looks like. He was pretty bad this year. I know he's had a lot of off-court stuff and that sort of thing going on. So, I think the Warriors probably need to blow it up, but I'm not 100% sure that is in their DNA.
Especially when they still have Steph. Like you said, like, he's not going anywhere. So as long as he wants to play basketball, they might as well try and build a contender around him. They have some young guys. It'll be good for them to get postseason experience if they're early experience competing for a postseason spot. But yeah, you don't tank with Steph on the roster, even if it probably makes sense for them. Like, if it wasn't the I guess, the legacy of Steph Curry in Golden State, kind of along with Klay and Draymond as well, you probably do say, hey, buddy, like, we do need to trade you. But since it's Steph Curry and Golden State, they've won four rings. Like, that's not going to happen. It shouldn't happen. No. But it does kind of put them in an awkward spot where they're not really good enough to win a championship. They also probably don't want to piece together all of these young guys to try and go all in on a championship. Maybe they would if the right deal came across, but they would just be kind of throwing in the towel on the 5 years after Steph retires. So it's an interesting situation, but we can start by talking about Steph, who went 42 in our dynasty mock. He's 36 years old now. His nine cat numbers dropped this past year, was a late second round guy. His field goal percentage really took a hit. How much longer are we expecting Steph to be Steph? Because there's a chance that if he wants to, he can keep playing for a couple of years, as, like, just running around, catch and shoot threes, and obviously still, you know, doing what he does on the offensive end. But maybe he's just too old to make enough of an impact defensively that it makes sense for him to continue to be on the court all the time. And again, if Steph Curry wants to play basketball, you play him as much as he wants to play. It doesn't really matter if he's a traffic cone on defense because he's 43 years old. If he wants to keep playing, you keep playing him. But as far as how we should view him as a fantasy asset, how much longer are you going to be a believer in Steph Curry?
Oh, I mean, define believer, I suppose. Like, I think he's still going to be a fantasy asset. If we look at the draft here that we're doing, he went at 23. So no way I'm taking him in the first round anymore, I don't think.
No.
I think per game he can be probably flirt with first round value purely because of the amount of threes that he hits. But we did start to see some cracks this season. There were games when he didn't hit a three. His ability to bounce back after a subpar performance wasn't as quick, I suppose. Like, it used to be that if he had a bad game, you'd almost guarantee that he'd come out and go for 40 the next night. That's not the case anymore. I do think his value is probably a bit dependent on whether they hold on to Klay and Draymond, and what if we can get an idea of what their mindset is for the season. Because there's obviously a lot of pressure on him to carry this team offensively. But if they're sort of, if they're going not rebuild, well, not tearing it down or not tanking or anything like that, but if they can sort of go to Steph, look, we're going to move on from Draymond, we're going to move on from Klay, we're starting to build a nice young core here around you. I think if some of the pressure is taken off him, that could actually help. So if they're contending and wanting to win and bringing back the same team, I think he'll push himself a bit too hard and they'll push him and that sort of thing. So I could actually see a rebuild here helping Curry next season, potentially. I don't know, and let's wait and see. But I think, yeah, look, if he's available in the second round, middle of the second round, you probably just take a chance on him and sort of in your mind, you pencil in 55 or 60 games, which isn't ideal, but it's also not terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably just what you have to do at this point, just because he's old and he's not the same player that he was. Like, it's just the way it is. Even if he is still the best shooter in the world and still a phenomenal player when he's on the court, it's just going to happen. Jonathan Kuminga went 53 in our dynasty mock. In 46 starts last year, averaged 17.2 points, 5.2 rebounds, and 2.8 assists per game. Is he kind of like, is he the starter of the future there? And this also kind of depends on what they do with Draymond. How do we value him if Draymond stays versus if they trade Draymond and open up that starting spot for him?
Yeah, I think his value is dependent on what they do with Draymond. But we saw down the stretch, I'm just bringing up, we saw down the stretch this season just gone, he had some really good games. He was efficient for a stretch of time there. he was, I remember earlier in the season, there were sort of rumblings that he was on the outer a little bit, and how does he fit into this rotation along with Moses Moody? But they seem to have moved through that, and he was, he was really good down the back end of the season. He was just plenty of double-digit games, lots of 20-point games, sprinkled in some steals and blocks. So I think, yeah, if he can get a consistent starting role where he's playing 30 minutes a night? Yeah, 30 minutes roughly. If he can be 30 minutes, I think he'll be a top 100 player this season, and probably does have a bit of upside to go further. I don't think we've really seen the best of him yet. We've scratched the surface with what we saw over the last 2 months. But, I don't mind him next season. But, again, let's wait and see what they do and whether they hand him the keys as a starter or are they going to roll back their veteran lineup.
He's got so much upside, but Steve Kerr's rotations were very, very interesting last year, especially who he was going to start versus who he was going to bring off the bench just changed so frequently. But it seemed like Kuminga kind of solidified himself as a starter, even when Draymond was there, which was a little bit encouraging as well. Another guy, Trayce Jackson-Davis, who could be their center of the future. Like, they haven't ever had, I guess, since Andrew Bogut left, like a true center, like that you felt like was a long-term guy. Like Kevon Looney played incredible, was incredibly valuable for the team, but you never felt like, oh, Kevon Looney's a guy that is like that I really want to roster in fantasy. Like he was going to get you rebounds pretty, like I think halfway decent blocks, like traditional center stuff at low volume. So not a super exciting fantasy guy, but Trayce Jackson-Davis has a little bit of upside. Started 16 games, averaged 11.3 points, 7.6 rebounds, 0.8 steals, and 1.7 blocks. Had a lot of big games as a shot blocker. Are you a believer in Trayce Jackson-Davis?
Not yet. I think we've seen bits and pieces that make us think that he can be sort of a viable must-roster kind of fantasy guy, but there are a few holes in his game, which we've seen as well. He reminds me a little bit of like a Brandon Clarke. So a good shot blocker, but his shot blocking comes from athleticism, not size. So I think it's one of those situations where his blocks could fluctuate, because if he gets a lower limb injury, a knee, an ankle, something like that, that's going to take away a lot of his athleticism for a short period of time, or if they're ongoing a long period of time. Whereas you guys like Wembanyama, Gobert, Brook Lopez, they purely rely on their ability to read the ball and read the game and their size, that sort of thing, their length. So I'm not sold on Jackson-Davis yet, but I do think he's their best option, which there's not much competition. It's Kevon Looney. So again, I think probably if he's going to start, if they don't make a move and get a center and he's going to start, I think he's probably worth taking at the back end, as a defensive guy who can get you some rebounds. He's a good rim runner, so he's going to be efficient from the field. Not great from the free throw line, but that's par for the course with a lot of these back end centers. So I don't mind him, but I'm not convinced yet.
Yeah, I think a late round target is probably where I would take him in redraft leagues as well. Just because, you know, he was really good in college, slipped to the Warriors very late in the second round, which was a lot later than most were expecting him to go. And I remember he like tweeted on draft night something. I don't remember specifically what he tweeted, but something like, you guys are going to regret passing on me. And for stretches, like, he showed that he was right during his rookie season. We'll see if that is a long-term option for them, or if he is just kind of a guy that can give you a little bit of numbers because there's no other center options, like you said. And the blocks were good. So hopefully that can keep up. Brandon Podziemski, also a rookie, went 99th in the Dynasty mock, 28 starts, averaged 9.5 points, 6.3 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, and 1.33. It's just a pretty well-rounded game. A little bit different from what the Warriors have had at guard over the past decade. His free throws are bad. Like, that's not traditional for the guards that Golden State has had. But a well-rounded game. What do you kind of think about Podziemski moving forward?
Probably another sort of question mark guy. There was a period sort of earlier in the season where he came out of nowhere and was playing all these minutes and he was a must roster player, and then they sort of moved him back to the bench and he was in and out a bit. So again, this has to do with Steve Kerr's weird rotations this season. He really couldn't set he wasn't set on a starting lineup. He seemed to go through phases of what he wanted to do, which I guess is a result of they weren't winning games. They were struggling, which is not what they're used to. So, but yeah, look, I think Podziemski does enough in a range of categories to be a nice fantasy guy, even in 26 to 28 minutes, whether he's starting or not. Another probably back end target at the moment, around similar to where you're taking Trayce Jackson-Davis in the last or second last round. But if they do move off Clay and they do move off Draymond and go down this path of rolling out their youth a little bit, and he starts and plays 32 minutes, 33 minutes, then he, yeah, top 100. I think he's within range. He's a good rebounder for a guard. So, yeah, hopefully he can improve the free throws. That's a weird sort of anomaly because he doesn't come across as a guy that should struggle from the free throw line. So maybe that was just some yips and getting used to the league, that sort of thing. So if he can iron that out, then I think he's a nice late round target who has a fairly safe floor if he's playing a decent role, but a bit of upside to probably get you some value come the end of the season.
Yeah, no, I like him long term. We'll see if he's able to, like, how much he's able to improve in year two. But I think long term, I'm pretty excited to bring to the Warriors a couple guys that could target in the draft. I don't think there's a specific position that they really should go for in the draft. Just should just be best player available. I think Isaiah Collier from USC could make some sense as a potential successor to Steph Curry at point guard. Stays kind of close to home, or at least close to where he went to school at USC. Kyle Filipowski, I know I just talked about him with the Kings. I think he's another option, just like having an outside shooter at the five. It's not really something they've had a ton of. Devin Carter, I think, is a guy that could come in and be a perimeter player that could help them out a ton. And then I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's Tijane Salaun, and I probably just butchered that atrociously. Apologies, but couldn't find a pronunciation online. But I think he has a ton of upside and could be another project for the Warriors to, as they kind of do this whole B team while the A team tries to win thing they've been doing the past 5 years with all the early draft picks they've had. So it wouldn't help them much now, but I think within a couple of years, he's a good succession plan for what they have. They'll have options I'm saying all this and I totally already said they don't have a first round pick. So just forget everything I just said because they don't have a first round pick. None of those guys are going to be there at 52. I got ahead of myself. We're going to move on to Miami, who also went 46 and 36. They won in the play-in tournament to be able to make it to play Boston in the first round, lost in five games, were without Jimmy Butler after he got hurt against Philly. They do have an early pick 15, and then they also have pick 43. For their team direction, they're a playoff team. I think that injuries and, I guess, kind of coasting during the regular season at times, things not being flawless, kind of, you know, make things uglier than they should be. But this is a playoff team when they're fully healthy. They added Terry Rozier, but he also missed a ton of time. I don't know. How do you kind of feel about this Heat team? And what did you think about Pat Riley's comments surrounding Tyler Hero hopefully being able to stay healthy and Jimmy Butler needing to keep his mouth shut if he's not playing?
Oh, look, that's Pat Riley, I suppose. We shouldn't be surprised. But, yeah, look, I don't know. The Heat are a weird team as well. We're obviously in that range now where we're talking about teams that are in limbo a little bit. Like, what direction do they go in? Is Jimmy Butler going to be traded? Or is he going to trade himself after what Pat Riley said? Yeah, the Heat they're a tough one to gauge. Like, I think that, as we know, the whole Heat culture thing is always going to keep them competitive. So even if they were to get rid of Butler and move away from him, they're still going to compete. They're still going to be sort of around that in the playoff discussion, just because of they're very well coached. They've got probably a top three coach in the league. So in terms of their direction, I think their direction is always the same. It's hard to see them tearing it down with the guys they've got. Moving Butler, for me, it's a no-brainer. Like, I know he's a really good player per game, but he was barely on the floor this season. I think not having him on the floor means guys like Hakez, Jovic, even Tyler Hero, Rozier, they're going to get more of the ball. They're going to get more opportunities. They probably are a team that tends to lean on Jimmy Butler when he's playing, where if he's not there, the other guys step up, which isn't unique to the Heat, but it is certainly noticeable. And I think we need to see what happens with Butler. Tyler Hero, Pat Riley wasn't lying. He needs to get healthy and stay healthy. And he hasn't had any injuries that are ongoing. Like, he hasn't had a knee injury that appears as though it's going to linger, like a Joel Embiid or anything like that. So hopefully he can stay healthy this season. But I'm just not sure they have, especially if Butler goes, like I said, they'll be competitive, but they just don't have that alpha, I don't think. Like, they don't have someone, their marquee player, because I don't think Tyler Hero is that guy yet anyway. And Bam Adebayo, for me, is probably peaked. I don't really see him being able to do a lot more than he's done the last couple of years. So they're probably a team that is going to be stuck in that range, I think, of in the East, of probably sort of back-end playoff play-in team.
Which they can make a run out of that. So I don't think they have any issues with trying to get there. Obviously, a few things have to go their way, but they did it. So they probably have this belief in their head that it doesn't really matter. We just got to get in and we're good. But didn't have Jimmy Butler on the list just because we kind of know what he is. But we also, you know, what else is there to talk about? Like, cool. Same thing with Rozier, but Tyler Hero went 74th in this dynasty mock. Is there any more room for growth with him, or is this just kind of the player that he's going to be for most of his career? Is like around, you know, 25 and 5, 25 and 5. Yeah. Just make sure we're on the same page about that. Or can he get better, or is it going to be a situation where, I mean, I guess the opportunity to get better would probably be via trade, where he's traded to a situation like a Washington, or like Washington-esque, not necessarily specifically Washington, where he can just be the guy and say, hey, like, we're not going to win games. Like, go shoot as much as you want. That's a great situation for a number of players. But if he's staying in Miami, can he get any better than what he has been in fantasy, or is his ceiling capped out and that's what he's going to be, which is still very good, but there's no reason to get super excited about it, I guess.
Yeah, I remember watching him at Summer League and thinking, oh, this guy's good, but I don't think he's going to be great. And obviously, watching someone in Summer League, it's only a very small sample size of their very early career. So he has turned himself into a really good scorer. Yeah, 25 and 5, good numbers. But as I said, not someone who can lead a team to a championship or anything like that. He's a at best second option, and I would say even a third, you could argue. So if he sticks around on the Heat and Jimmy Butler is traded, then I think there's probably some scope for him to up his scoring a bit to 22 or 23, purely just the volume of shots that he's going to get. But we also have to factor in that Terry Rozier sort of came in late, never really got comfortable. So if he's back as well, he's going to take some of those shots. They've got, I mean, Duncan Robinson was someone who sort of turned things around. Harkes had a good rookie year. Jovic was promising. So they've got a lot of good players, no great players. Hero is probably at the top of that bunch, if you don't include Bam. So I don't know. I guess there's some scope for him to improve here, but he's not. He's probably someone that's going to go a bit too high for me in drafts next year, because I think he'll go around that 60 range, maybe 70, and he wasn't even a top 100 player this year in Ninecat. So if he was available sort of in the 80s or 90s, I'd probably take him. But, yeah, I think fairly safe floor, but his upside is probably limited to top 60 best case.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's probably going to be kind of a running theme here with most of the guys that we talk about, and the guys that we don't talk about, is that they just kind of are what they are. I don't really see many players on the Heat being able to take a massive step forward. One of the guys I did want to ask to see if you think that that could happen is Jaime Jaquez Jr., who was really good as a rookie, but he was an older rookie, so he's expected to come in, be a little bit more ready to help them compete. Wasn't great for fantasy, had some solid stretches. Do you think he's a guy that can be a top, we'll say 75 guy? Could he be a top 100 guy? Or do you think he's a player that you probably roster, but he's not going to be great for fantasy, but he's just a good basketball player for the Heat and plays enough and does enough that, okay, yeah, he deserves a roster spot.
Yeah, again, probably depends on Jimmy Butler, if he's there or not.
Yeah.
For me, probably, I think he's, I mean, and the Heat are a very smart organization. I think he was just a really good fit for their team and their culture and what they're doing. And so I think he's an example of a player being, who's probably not super talented. I mean, he obviously is super talented if you compare him to the world. But if you compare him to NBA, he's not elite. I think he's just a very good fit on that team and has a pretty clear role, which makes him someone you can roster. I think you can roster him, but I don't think that, yeah, top 75, that's probably best case scenario. I'd rather get him 120, 130. You probably just throw him on the end of your bench. He'll have periods, as we saw this season, where he will have a week of top 60 value for because his shots will be falling. But I think he's probably a player whose value to this team is, in real life, far outweighs his fantasy value. So I think you could draft him, but I don't, at this point, I'm not confident he can be a must roster player. He's probably someone that's going to be rostered for 2 weeks and then someone will get sick of him and drop him and you pick him up. And much like this year, but obviously if Jimmy Butler's not there, maybe he sticks around on the back of your roster.
Yeah, I think if Jimmy Butler gets traded and they don't replace him with somebody else that's soaking up a ton of minutes, Jaquez could be a starter. And if he's playing starter minutes, I think he is a guy that would be, top 100. I would think that that's what he can be. But again, the stars have to align a little bit. We'll see. Maybe Pat Riley's comments are just part of Heat culture and Jimmy Butler will be fine sticking around. We'll see. I don't think that probably happens in 29 other cities, but maybe Heat culture will prevail here and it's just tough love. Cool. Bam Adebayo went 30th in our Dynasty mock. He's obviously one of, if not the best defender in the league. But the defensive stats haven't always been there. Are we just kind of like with Tyler Hero and pretty much everyone else here, just kind of accepting, hey, Bam is what he is. Maybe the only benefit or way that he improves in fantasy is if they trade away more guards and he is just forced to facilitate a little bit more like he did earlier in his career. But other than that, he just kind of is what he is. Though he did add the three-point shot and was really shooting that a good bit down the stretch and in the playoffs, which opens up things for them, but I don't think you're really going to rely on him to provide value with threes.
Yeah, Bam was actually pretty disappointing this year, I thought. I can't remember where I took him. I did have him in a team. And I mean, he was 19 and 10, 1.1 steals, 0.9 blocks. So defensive stats are fine. But as I said earlier, I think he's just plateaued. I think he sort of was early in his career. There was all this upside. He was quite raw and he was seen as, he reminds me a bit of Pascal Siakam. He sort of ascended quite quickly in the space of 1 to 2 years. He was all of a sudden this top 25, top 30 player. You need to roster him, but he wasn't even a top 50 player this year. 75% from the line, which isn't terrible, but it's not what you expect. So I don't see him ascending at all. I think he's probably someone that clearly that you need to roster, and you're probably drafting him. Where did he go in our draft? So he went third pick of the third round. So that's 31. That's fine. I think that's probably where you need to take him, just because you want to get centers early. So you probably need to take him in the low 30s. I'd love to get him in the 40s, but I don't think he's going to fall that far. But if you look at guys around him, he went at, 31. Markkanen went after him. Harden went before him. Jaren Jackson went before him. Towns went three picks after him. LaMelo Ball went five picks after him. Cade Cunningham went six. All of those guys have upside to get inside the top 20, top 15, maybe, where I don't think Bam does. So I think he's a safe pick, but not really an upside play.
No. Yeah, I think it's, just kind of he is what he is at this point. Could he make steps to improve as a basketball player? Yes. Like, those can still happen. I'm not seeing him make massive improvements in fantasy, barring them just using him differently and using him as more of a facilitator, which, looking back at some of his best seasons in fantasy, that's what happened. Is, he had a year where he averaged 5.4 assists and was a top 20 guy. A year before that was 5.1 assists and was 44th on Basketball Monster. And that's before he made improvements in other categories. So if he's able to get the assists up to 5 per game, then that's the main improvement that we'll see out of him. But other than that, not too much to get excited about in fantasy, other than what we just know he's going to give you. The last guy to talk about, Nikola Jovic, went 159 in our dynasty mock, kind of moved into the starting lineup late in the year or second half of the year. That didn't always mean that he was playing a ton of minutes. Like, there was plenty of starts where he only played like 15 minutes, which that's just kind of a thing that Miami does for some reason. But when he played big minutes, the numbers were generally pretty good. If he is given a permanent starting spot in Miami, how do you kind of view him heading into next season?
He's probably, I think of all of these players, he's the biggest question mark. Like, I think there's, could go either way. As we said with Hero, Harkiz, Bam, we sort of know who they are. There's not a lot of room to move either way. But yeah, as you said, Jovic, he started basically the last 2 months of the season, and through the playoffs, scoring very up and down. So he had some 20-point games, and then he'll have games where he hits one shot kind of thing, two shots. So production is pretty up and down. I don't really know. I would say at this point, again, it hinges on Jimmy Butler. If he's given a starting role, maybe you take him with a last pick and just see what he can do. But There's probably players with a bit more upside that I'd rather take in that range at the moment. I just don't think we've seen consistency from Jovic on either end of the court. So I don't know. He's intriguing, but I'm not sold that he's going to be someone that you need to roster.
Yeah, I agree. I still think the upside is there. Is that going to be next year that it all kind of comes together? I don't know. I wouldn't bank on it. I think you're right. A late round target is probably where he needs to be in redraft, but still a guy to hang on to in dynasty leagues. They do have the 15th pick, some guys they could look at. I mentioned Devin Carter out of Providence when I was talking about Golden State hypothetically having a lottery pick, but I think Devin Carter is just fits like a glove into Heat culture. It just seems like a Heat pick. Like Devin, that's just what Devin Carter is. I think he is the guy that they need to draft just because I think he just fits. He's just a Miami Heat pick. So don't be shocked when you hear Devin Carter's name called for the Heat on draft night. Isaiah Collier out of USC also makes sense, I think. And Jared McCain, those are three guys who could go in that range that could be good picks for the Heat. But we'll see. Again, I think at this point, you're just going best player available or somebody that can help you next year that's pretty NBA ready. And I think all three of those guys would be able to contribute something next year as Miami tries to be better and tries to actually make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals like they have multiple times recently. Kingy, that's going to do it for this one. Next time I bring you on, we'll talk about some more teams or some teams that are a little bit more exciting to talk about, have a little bit more upside. And I feel like that's just kind of what happens when you talk about some of the middle of the pack teams. I know you've been kind of, you know, taking time to enjoy basketball, which is, you know, kind of a fun thing to do. But do we have any content we should be looking out for from you coming up?
Yeah, look, nothing regular for the next little bit. As you said, I am just taking a bit of time off. My other job's been pretty busy, so it's sort of worked out well. I will start recording the analyst interviews shortly, so they'll be releasing probably June, July. So I think I've got about 15 people lined up for those, so have some good analysts, both fantasy and non-fantasy, which would be good. And then our show, like Balls Deep and got another potential new show in the works, will probably be launching July, maybe. Sort of once the draft is done, once the season's done, give people a couple of weeks and then we'll start ramping up our content for next season. But we're almost done with our mock draft, so I'll probably just do another mock draft. And then our draft only league, so that if anyone that's in our Discord server or has done them before, we run a lot of draft only leagues at FBI, so they'll be launching as soon as the season's done. So what have we got, a month maybe, something like that, till the season's done. So once that's done, once the NBA draft is done, our draft only leagues will kick off. And they're a lot of fun, just to draft $5-$10. So buy-ins aren't huge, but gives you, for those degenerates like us who are just craving fantasy, it does give you something to do through those down months. So yeah, a little bit coming out, but probably July is when we start to ramp up.
Yeah, so the NBA draft will be June 26th and 27th. It's on 2 days this year, dividing up the first and second round. So be on the lookout for draft-only leagues, I guess. Like you said, July, just shortly after the draft ends.
Yeah.
Kingy, this was fun. Definitely, obviously, have you back on. But I appreciate you joining me for this one.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Always, always fun.
Yep. It was a blast, and I hope everybody that listened had a blast. And as always, thank you guys for listening.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.